Winter Music by Ken Whitmore, with Martin Jarvis as Thomas Haviland.
Gimmerbeck out? Anybody for Gimmerbeck? Gimmerbeck out?
I first came to Gimmerbeck at night, in a violent snowstorm, bringing Angela home at last.
Gimmerbeck out? Mind the door, sir. Stand back, please. Perishing night, sir.
The train paused at the little halt just long enough to put us out. It stood clanking and trembling in the bitter cold, then hurried on with a thickening layer of snow on top of the coaches.
You all right, Alan? Can you manage? Steady now. What's your beat? Steady, lad. Steady.
I stood on a tiny strip of platform in the great cold wilderness. It was lit, for some reason, by dim blue lamps in ornate Victorian holders under a fretted canopy. Snowflakes as big as 50-pence pieces were whirling out of the pitch-black night. Mr. Wiseman and his son Alan attended to Angela as gently and respectfully as the conditions permitted, although Wiseman the elder did have half an inch of cigarette stuck to his lower lip. Two tramps in long, ragged overcoats were huddling together, passing a bottle under the canopy, the only protection for miles around. Poor devils, I thought. Then one of them, a skinny little fellow with an old yellow face, suddenly ran up to me, knelt at my feet, and popped off a flash bulb in my face, half blinding me.
Hey, what do you think you're up to?
Just a little snap for the paper. Now hold it there. Smile.
Smile.
Thank you, boss.
Another flash bulb went off. Then the fat tramp came hobbling up. He looked about 90.
Excuse me, sir. Just one moment. Can you confirm that this really is Angela that you're bringing home?
What the hell's it got to do with you?
It's got to do with everybody living in Gimmerbeck. They have a right to know.
Who are you? What was that photo in Adolf?
My name's Stanley Grinton of the Rigworth Evening Post. Would you care to make a statement?
Statement? Why should the papers be interested in us?
Well, if you don't know that, Mr. I didn't quite catch your name.
And you're not going to get it. Now, go on, push off.
Her male travelling companion would make no comment.
He wrote this down in a grubby little notebook. Then the wind tore it from his hand and he went puffing away after it. Meanwhile, out in the street, Mr. Wiseman and his son were helping Angela into the back of the car. An awkward process, what with all the snow underfoot and whirling about their heads. Then the little photographer scampered up to them, knelt in the snow, and took a picture of Angela going into the back.
Hi! What the hell do you think you're doing? Just clear off, will you? Get the hell out of here!
I'm only doing my job, mister.
Listen, Squire, before you go, just give us a break. If you could just confirm that this really is Angela.
Good Lord. Couple of madmen.
Like as not, sir. Take no notice.
I was sitting in the front with Wiseman. The son, Alan, got in at the other side of me. A dewdrop hung from the end of his nose. There's plenty of room for the three of us. Those cars are spacious.
How far is it? Gimmerbeck House.
No more than a couple of mile.
2 miles. Are we going to make it?
I shouldn't wonder.
Have the roads been gritted? Salted?
Not seriously.
2 miles seem more like 12. We couldn't see more than a yard ahead for the snow that now blew horizontally, and those roads switch back up and down hellish fells. At the bottom of one hill, Alan had to dig us out. He never said a word. His dewdrop never budged. He might have been a deaf mute. Finally, we went sliding down the side of a long, steep valley, and the road flattened out, and lights began to wink in little roadside cottages.
There you are, sir.
Gimmerbeck House.
You go on ahead, sir. We'll see to Miss Angela.
Right. Thank you.
Dimly through the blizzard, I could just make out the shape of a big, four-square house, with a golden light shining over what I took to be the porch. Just down the road stood the bulk of a much bigger building, a really massive place, like a prison or a barracks. Another sound came between the gusting of the wind, a biggish river in full spate. I opened the iron gates, walked up the short path to the house, and rang the bell. The door opened, and Angela was standing there. Angela, giving me her familiar quizzical frown, brushing the loose curl from her forehead as she always did when she was anxious.
Good evening. You must be Thomas Haviland.
Yes. Good evening.
I'm Grace Herdwick. Well, come in.
Thank you. Shall I leave the door open for...
The door? Oh, yes. Leave it open for Angela. You brought bad weather with you. Shall I take your hat and coat?
Oh, thank you.
You did very well to get here. But Mr. Wiseman doesn't know the meaning of defeat.
No, so it seems.
Now, if you come into the living room, there's a good fire. This way.
I stopped dead in the doorway and stared. Across the room by the fireplace stood another Angela. Angela glancing at me over her shoulder like a frightened bird on a branch, as she always did when a stranger walked in. Was I going down with malaria again? Was I hallucinating?
Virginia, this is Thomas. Thomas Haviland.
At last. How nice. Good evening.
Thomas, my sister Virginia.
How do you do?
Did you have a pleasant... Did you have a good journey? Oh, no, of course you didn't. How silly of me.
That voice. Angela's voice.
Come up to the fire and get warm, Thomas.
But I couldn't move. I merely stared stupidly at the pair of them standing there side by side in the firelight. Angela next to Angela. Then my head, or my vision, cleared, and I started noting the differences. Grace's face was severe and lined, as though she'd undergone a great illness or sadness. There was a touch of grey in the dull, dark red hair. Virginia was altogether slighter than Angela. Younger, fresher, like Angela new-minted. Yes, like Angela as she must have been at 20. Her hair shone like a new copper coin, whereas Angela's was more like oak leaves in October. Autumn oak leaves on the old tree, on that high Cornish cliff.
Grace, where's Angela?
You'll see her in a moment, darling. They're just bringing her into the hall.
I don't think I want to see her. I don't think I could stand it. Why has she come back?
Virginia's voice was pure Angela, not a shade of difference.
What is she doing here? What is she doing here? What is he doing here? What are you doing here?
And suddenly a log fell in the grate. The flames leapt up. The reflections ran over their faces. And all at once the two women facing me became one. And that one was Angela, the real Angela, rushing towards me over the heather and the dying bracken on that Cornish clifftop high above Morganmouth. The grey sea was in full slow swell far below, the wind stripping the leaves from the great oak that stood on the skyline. Leaves that matched her hair so perfectly that when one of them clung to her shoulder for a moment, it was like a lock of her hair.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
What do you think you're doing? Who gave you permission? Don't you know you're trespassing?
Trespassing? I'm sorry, I had no idea.
I said, what do you want? What are you doing on my land?
Yours? I thought it was public property.
Yes, mine. What are you doing on it?
Well, I was surveying it, but could I explain?
Surveying it? Why? What for?
I'm a surveyor, a land surveyor.
What a damnable nerve. Who are you working for?
For no one. Let me explain. I've just arrived here to set up in private practice. The trouble is I haven't touched a theodolite for more than a year, and I was just seeing if I could still do it. Call it a training exercise.
But she wasn't listening. She was too angry. Before I could move, she rushed past me, hoisted the tripod in the air, and hurled my theodolite over the cliff.
Now, don't let me see you here again, or I'll kill you! I'll kill you! Kill you!
That afternoon, I had an appointment down in Morganwith with John Dockett, a solicitor who'd been at school with my father. He sat as coroner and drew up wills and a lot of other dry stuff to finance his watercolour painting and his family of seven girls.
And where have you been working?
I've been prospecting for copper in Afghanistan.
Is that a fact? Got out just the neck of time, did you?
Oh, there were no problems.
You look a bit strained, if you don't mind me saying so. Old Ruskies didn't rough you up, I trust.
No. Spot of malaria, that's all.
Malaria? Ooh, that could be nasty. I once knew a man who died of it in the middle of an English winter. Everybody thought the poor fellow had flu.
Yes, well, now, what I had in mind, John, was finding some office premises here in the High Street and setting out my stall. There's no other land surveyor within 40 miles of here.
An office in the High Street? Ooh, it'll gobble up all your profits. Why not work from home?
I only have the cottage for 3 months. Winter let.
Find a house. Work from there.
I'm broke, virtually.
I see. Well, look, leave this with me. I'll think of something. Thomas, I don't want to pry, but are you sure nothing unpleasant happened to you in Afghanistan?
If you mean I look a little shaken up. Well, a wild woman attacked me on the cliff this morning.
Eh?
Threw my theodolite over the cliff.
Good heavens, who was she?
Said I was on her land. Tallish, slim woman, auburn hair. Something of a beauty, in a sad way.
Well, you do mean Angela Hawthorne.
Didn't introduce herself, just yelled and jumped up and down a lot. Who's Angela Hawthorne?
She's a potter. Models the most beautiful porcelain butterflies and moths. Mm. Has a house and studio up there. Slightly cracked, of course, like all so-called artists, but I never heard of her actually frothing at the mouth before.
How do you mean, cracked?
A recluse, lives on her own, won't mix. She's painfully secretive and shy. Never heard of her attacking anybody, though. You amaze me. What exactly provoked this exhibition?
Oh, hello. This is Thomas Haviland.
Yes?
Your check's just arrived in the post. Thanks awfully. Hello? Are you still there?
Yes, I'm glad you got the check. I hope it will help you buy a new theodolite. Goodbye.
No, wait. I was just wondering, do you think we might get together sometime in less unfriendly circumstance? Hello? Hello? Well, the answer appears to be no. Okay, so, who cares?
The truth is that I did. The ghastly attraction of the unavailable, maybe. Some nights I'd walk up the cliff path in the dark and stand in her garden spying on her. I'd get a strange pleasure from just one glimpse of her shadow passing a lighted window. On still nights, with the sea whispering behind me, I'd hear her playing, Fauré, Chopin. Sometimes the songs our grandparents used to sing on musical evenings at home. And I felt I belonged inside there. But she put the phone down every time I called. Then John Dockett invited me to an 18th birthday party of his youngest daughter. And one of the first people I saw there was Angela, huddled in a corner like a bird that had got itself trapped inside a room.
Miss Hawthorne, how do you do? How are you?
Oh, hello. Very well.
Thank you for the check.
Check? Oh, it was the least I could do. I know it sounds feeble, but I had an appalling headache that day. I was sorry the minute I did it. Your theodolite.
Yeah, that's all right. I understand.
Do you? You were so terribly hurt. I don't like hurting anyone. I've never hurt anyone in my life.
I believe you.
Is it Pat's, then?
Yes, Pax. Look here, I wonder if... could I visit you? Your pottery?
Oh, no. Sorry, but I don't receive callers. Nothing personal. Will you excuse me? I must be getting home.
Yes, of course.
I really came here to discuss a business matter with Mr. Dockett, but somehow I seem to have wandered into this party. Well, goodbye, Mr. Haviland.
Angela, Miss Hawthorne. Where do you think you're off to?
I must go home.
No. You don't escape my butterfly net so easily, young woman. I want to see you in my study for a moment.
Yes, all right.
You too, Thomas.
Me?
Come on. This way. Now, have you two made your peace? Yes, you're both reasonable people. Now, I speak to you as two valued clients. The situation in a nutshell is that Miss Hawthorne is a wee bit short of the ready at the moment, and in some danger of losing her lovely house.
Mr. Dockett, this is my own...
Now, we'd all hate to see the old place converted into some plutocratic second home, or, God forbid, holiday flats, and the only answer is to find somebody willing to share the expenses. Thomas, on the other hand, needs a base for his land survey business.
No! It's out of the question.
And you've plenty of accommodation going begging. There, I've solved both your problems. And now I must go and toast my daughter's health. You two sit here for a while and admire my watercolors and ponder my wisdom.
It's out of the question.
Yes, of course.
Share my home? With you? Oh, my God, you're hurt again. Why are you so easily hurt? I seem to do nothing but hurt you. Has something happened to you? Where have you come from?
I've been in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan? But surely...
Yes, Russians.
Are Englishmen allowed?
Not really. I spent 3 months in a KGB dungeon in an old hill fort outside Kandahar.
I could tell there was something.
They took me for a spy.
And were you?
No, just an innocent abroad. I was prospecting for a copper mining company. The Russians thought I was drawing plans of their secret military installations.
Did they hurt you?
They didn't pat me on the back. That's all water under the bridge.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrogate. I'm so sorry. I know what you must have gone through. Look,
Yes?
Come up on Sunday if you still want to. Sunday lunch? Bring a bottle of wine if you like. None for me, though. I'm teetotal.
Are you sure I can't tempt you?
Thank you. I prefer water. Don't you find wine makes your thoughts cloudy?
With me, that's not absolutely a disadvantage. Your good health.
Bon appetit.
Beautiful crockery. Do you make them all yourself?
Well, they're quite boring.
Oh, they're, what, classically pure?
Thank you, but I don't put much of my heart into them. Those, butterflies get all the love.
Up there. May I touch them?
Yes.
They look like the real thing. When I walked in here, I thought there was a cloud of butterflies hovering over my head. I thought it was suddenly summer.
I'm still searching for the perfect glaze. Something delicate and iridescent.
Have you always been a potter?
No.
Oh.
Once I was a little girl.
Whereabouts was that?
Nowhere in particular.
You weren't brought up locally?
No.
Parents still alive?
No, I was an orphan.
An orphan?
Yes, from birth.
Oh, Lord. Was it horrible?
Having nothing to compare it with, I wouldn't know. No, it was lovely. I had a lovely childhood.
Who brought you up?
Mr. and Mrs. Daffodil.
Mr. and Mrs. Daffodil? Really?
Yes.
Sounds like a name out of a storybook. Did they adopt you or what?
It was an orphanage.
They gave you a good rounded education. You seem more like a product of a pampered, prosperous home.
Really?
Oh, I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Are you sure you weren't a spy?
What?
You ask an awful lot of questions.
Oh, sorry. Wine loosening the tongue.
Genihentos pentamentos.
Beg your pardon?
Genihentos pentamentos. It was a favourite expression of my...
Yes?
It's an old Latin American saying. It means a person forever bursting with 500 questions.
Latin America? Have you ever been...
Mr. Haviland, as you might have noticed, I'm rather averse to questions.
I'm just trying to get to know you.
That's what I was afraid of. Mr. Haviland, you made a number of phone calls here. Before we get off on the wrong foot, I'd like to make it clear that I don't want anyone to be interested in me in that way. I can live without men. There are hundreds of nice Cornish girls who'd be glad of your attentions. Don't waste your time pursuing me. Forgive me for seeming to presume such a lot about your motives, but if you're to come and live in this house, I don't want you to be under any illusions. The arrangement must be a purely business one. You'll have your half of the house, I'll have mine. We'll eat separately, spend our evenings separately, do everything separately. And please, don't entertain any hopes that you can win me round eventually. I've a wonderful vegetable garden which consumes hours of my time. I practically feed myself. I've a job I love, a house I love, and a clear conscience. I'm perfectly content with my life. And at this late stage, I don't want any complications.
This late stage? How old are you?
I'm 30. As I say, you're welcome to my house, but not my life. All right?
Well, thank you very much, but I think I can see when I'm not wanted.
Good heavens, you are wanted. I just don't want you to confuse the different kinds of want. I want you in order to keep this house, this way of life. Haven't you been listening to a word I've said? Sorry. I just had to make myself clear so there could be no misunderstandings.
What have you got against men?
Ginihanthos pentamentos. Very well. It's just that when people interact, it's rather like mixing unknown chemicals in a test tube. The results are so unpredictable. You can get explosions, poisonous gases. I think the world would be a perfect place if only people left one another alone. Look, it is evening.
Yes. What an amazing sky.
No, I was saying the first line of a poem, by one of your Russians, in fact. No, not one of your Russians. She was named Marina Svetaeva.
Oh, yes.
Look, it is evening. Look, it is nearly night. What do you speak of? Poets? Lovers? Generals? The wind is level now. The earth is wet with dew. The storm of stars in the sky will turn to quiet. And soon all of us will sleep under the earth. We will never let each other sleep above it.
Yes. Yes, I see.
That says it all, Mr. Haviland.
And so I moved in, and behaved impeccably. Our avoidance of each other became almost farcical, so that meeting outside the bathroom in slippers and dressing gowns, we'd leap apart with exaggerated apologies. But I drew enormous comfort simply from the sounds she made in her studio and other distant rooms. Sometimes I'd hide behind the curtains and watch her at work in the cabbage patch. Then one day, there was utter silence, and towards evening I couldn't stand her absence any more, and I ventured up to her bedroom.
Angela? Are you there? You all right? Angela, are you ill?
Please, go away.
Can I get you something to eat?
Leave me alone, mind your own business.
Sorry.
I couldn't keep anything down. It's kind of you to ask.
Have you been here all day?
Ginihentos pentamentos.
What? Oh, 500 questions. Sorry. There's been a thick sea fret all day. The house is enveloped in a white mist. Quite wonderful. Got a headache?
Yes. Please go away.
Have you seen a doctor?
Many a time. They just give me pills that don't work.
I see. Can I get you some fresh bedclothes?
Mind your own business. I'm warning you. Get out. Get out.
Sorry.
Please. I'm impossible in these moods. Just leave me in peace.
Next day, I took her up some breakfast, but she wouldn't touch it. Lunch, the same. I sent for a doctor, and he diagnosed a virus and said she'd soon be right as rain. The next day, she ate the food I took up, and that night she came down and ate the dinner I'd prepared. After that, we began to eat together every night. Within the month, well, the inevitable happened.
Thomas! Thomas!
Good God. I'm so sorry. What did I do?
Nothing. It's all right. I'm all right.
I hurt you. I'm sorry.
It's my own fault. Letting a bull into my china shop.
If I didn't know better, I'd say that it was your first time.
Yeah, it was. It was my first time.
What?
How easily the walls of Jericho come down at last.
Your first time? Oh, nonsense.
It isn't nonsense.
But where have you... I mean, why did you never... But how could such a...
Hush! Ginihentos pentamentos.
But
What
an impossibly sheltered life.
Hush. Thomas.
Yes.
Let's keep it sheltered. Promise me you'll keep it sheltered.
There can never be greater happiness than we shared on those winter nights when Angela sang and played to me before bright driftwood fires in the snug drawing room. The house seemed perpetually wrapped in a kindly white fog, sheltering us, hiding us, keeping out all the world as she wished.
What do you see in the fire, my darling? Gold-haired lassie beside my knee. Is it a castle in El Dorado? Is it a lover from o'er the sea? Leave the castle to others, lassie. Let the lover come whence he may. Love in the humblest cottage. Never mind what the world will say.
They were mostly songs of yearning for some ideal family, the one she'd never known. Well, I could remedy that.
What is it there in the flames, my darling? Do you wonder what I can see? The old white house and the little garden. It all comes back to me. Oh, the sound of the mill wheel turning. Oh, the scent of the lilac tree. When I was a girl like you, my darling. When your grandfather
ask a question.
Just one.
Marry me.
I don't see why. You can sleep with me any time.
I want to say she's mine. Look, she's mine.
I won't sleep with anybody else, if that's what's bothering you. Ever. I promise.
So why not marry me?
Marriage can cause pain. Destruction.
Wait. Have you been married?
A virgin bride? No, never.
So, what do you know about it, then? I tell you, marriage is the new thing. It's just been discovered. It sweeps away all the old-fashioned notions like sleeping around, like shacking up. Two people get inextricably committed and intercommingled. It's luxury goods. It's such a luxury, they punish you for it. Your taxes go up. You have to endure each other's in-laws. Ah, no, wait. I'll have no in-laws, will I? I'll get off light. That's right, isn't it? You've no hidden parents waiting to spring out on me?
No, no parents.
Must have a mother somewhere. Or did she die? Did you tell me? Where are you going? Angela, come back. What did I say?
Please don't follow me.
But look.
I've got a headache, that's all. Good night.
She succumbed. On the 14th of August, we were married at Cranbourne Register Office, with John and Clara Dockett as witnesses, and Mrs. Garnett, our daily, as matron of honour. All seven Dockett girls came to throw confetti. I still find bits of it in my best suit. We didn't go away. Everything was there on our doorstep. Happiness consists of an unbroken string of trivialities you hardly notice at the time. My hard-boiled egg rolls away in the sand. She picks it up and wipes it on her bare arm, and hands it back. I take a bite, and it's slightly gritty against my teeth. Things like that. One day I found her holding my cutthroat razor.
What are you doing with that?
What?
Careful, it's sharp.
Yes, I know. You left it lying open on the wash basin shelf.
Oh, sorry. Well, give it to me.
Why don't you use an electric one?
Well, there's no juice in the Afghan hills. I got used to the faithful old Sweeney Todd model. They're quite safe unless you run berserk with them.
Oh, what? Why should anyone do that? Please don't leave it lying about again. All right. Keep it out of sight.
Sure, if it upsets you.
Next day, she went out and bought me an electric shaver, but I still preferred the trusty old cutthroat and used it when she wasn't about. Her headaches increased in frequency and intensity, but the doctors dismissed them with words like stress and virus and psychosomatic. They said it was something she had to live with and kept doling out the pills. One evening towards Christmas, when she was laid low in bed, I sat in the drawing room flipping through a tattered children's painting book I'd unearthed from an old oak coffer in the attic. The name Angela was printed in pencil on the cover. Inside, sometimes in pencil, sometimes in paint, she portrayed a house and family. The house was plain and square, with hills rising steeply behind. The handsome and prosperous family of four were identified in her painstaking writing as Mummy, Daddy, Grace, and Virginia, these last two being young girls very much resembling Angela herself. For a moment or two, I felt as though I'd been knocked sideways by one of those ball-and-chain demolition machines. She was no orphan, and here was the proof. And then it came to me. This was no real family, but the ideal family of her imagination. She'd none of her own, so she'd fallen back on inventing this one, complete down to the old family dog stretched out on a red hearthrug, and the ginger kitten curled up by an Argus stove, and given the name Snuff. I was digesting all this, when the door opened and she came in. She was barefoot in a white nightgown, and her face was white too, frighteningly white.
What are you reading?
Oh, feeling a little better.
What's that you're looking at?
This, oh, nothing.
May I see?
Well, actually...
This is mine!
There's no need to snatch. Oh, you've torn it.
Where did you find it?
Well...
You've been rummaging. You've been ferreting through my things. We had an agreement there was to be no prying.
I love you. I want to know all about you.
The church calls curiosity a sin, and they're right. It's low and vile and despicable.
Good God, if I'm jealous of your past, you should be pleased.
Pleased? You act like a spy. Is that what you were? Well, don't spy on me.
Darling, you're ill. Let me get you back to bed.
Don't touch me or I'll kill you. Kill you.
Angela.
Kill you! I never wanted you here. You came fawning and flattering and I let you in. You waited for my first moment of weakness and then you pounced. I fell for nature's oldest trick and then you're lost. You're gone.
Darling, listen to me.
This little book is the one thing I had left. And now you've pried into it with your dirty fingers. It's no use to me anymore.
No,
so there.
Please, no, don't tear it up.
There, it's all I had left. Into the fire. There. Burn the last page. There. My childhood, burn, burn. You satisfied now, Thomas? Now get out of my way.
Angela!
I'll kill you!
Her face was twisted. One eye was larger than the other. She came scuttling towards me with the poker raised high. At the last moment, she swerved away. Not me, but the butterflies. She smashed them to fragments, to powder, her precious, delicate butterflies. Then the ornaments on the sideboard, the china chessmen, the flower bowls.
Feeling better now, Mrs. Haviland?
Yes, I feel wonderful. All the pressure's suddenly been lifted for the first time in months.
Yes, the tablets give that impression. Actually, the pressure is still there. To take it away in reality, we must do something... a little more dramatic.
Surgery?
very major surgery.
Can't I just keep on with the tablets?
No, no, no. No, they're only a very temporary measure.
I see.
When will you operate?
Speed is vital. As soon as possible.
And what if you don't?
You might last 3 months. Look, I'm going to speak very honestly. This is a young woman who wishes to know the truth. The scan shows two tumors, both cystic and both non-malignant.
Non-malignant?
Yes.
Thank God.
Yes, the main devil is a subdural hygroma, about that size, a billiard ball, yes? Pressing on the surface of the brain. It's in a very small, a very awkward and delicate chamber, the little brain. This is the signal box for many of your most vital reflexes, Mrs. Haviland.
What are my chances?
Your chances of coming through are 50-50. I'm sorry, but the truth is best for us all.
Thank you.
You must have experienced great discomfort from quite an early age.
Yes.
You must have been tormented. I believe you were born with this problem.
Really?
I believe it's hereditary. Have any other members of your family died from tumors? Strokes? Cancer of the liver, perhaps?
I don't know. I'm not aware.
No, never mind. To be explored later.
Could it be responsible for my, I have occasional brainstorms.
Quite likely. It could very well account for them. It's a tormenting sickness. The pressure on the brain is severe. Fits of temper, what you might call tumorous tantrums, are hardly surprising in one so cruelly tried. 25% of brain tumors first come to light as a result of changes in character, irrational behavior in otherwise impeccable people. Excuse me, you'll want to talk to one another about this.
Thank you.
Oh, precious Jesus, I've never hurt a soul in my life.
You'll be fine, you'll be fine.
I never hurt a soul in my life. No. Remember that, Thomas, not a single soul.
Hello, is that Gimmerbeck 2438?
Yes?
My name's Thomas Haviland. Who am I speaking to, please?
You're speaking to Grace Herdwick. Why?
I'm ringing in connection with Angela Hawthorne.
Angela Hawthorne? I don't know anyone of that name.
She was my wife. She's just died. And going through her papers just now, I came across this document that says she wishes to be buried in the Herdwick family plot at Gimmerbeck. Hello? Are you still there?
Yes.
Does this make any sense to you?
You must be speaking of my sister.
Sister?
My sister, Angela. When did she die?
Last night. But she had no... She told me she had no sisters. No family.
Yes, we were her family.
Good grief. Well, this request of hers, the family plot, is it all right if I bring her home? Hello, are you still there?
How much did Angela tell you about her past?
Very little, as you'll gather. But
did she tell you nothing about her parents?
She told me she was an orphan from birth.
I see. Well, you must prepare yourself for an unpleasant shock. You see, no, I can't speak of it over the telephone.
Speak of what? All right, tell me when I get there.
Wait. Do you still intend coming?
Well, of course I intend coming.
It would be better if you didn't.
Better for who? Hello? You there?
Send Angela, if you must, but keep away yourself.
Not come to my own wife's funeral?
You'll be sorry if you do.
I'll be even sorrier if I don't, won't I?
No, John! No! Virginia!
Why is she here? Why?
This is her home.
She gave it up years ago.
Virginia, she's your sister.
Gave that up too. I don't want to see her. I'm going. I'm going until she's gone.
Going where?
To my room. Until she's out of here. Excuse me.
She brushed past me into the hall. Angela's coffin lay there on two chairs. The girl gave it a glance,
flinched, almost fell, then ran up the stairs.
You see what you've done?
What I've done?
I told you not to bring her back.
For God's sake, tell me. Tell me what she did.
What do you know about my parents?
Nothing.
They ran the woolen mill here between them. They kept this Dale alive. They were a perfect mother and father. Angela had nothing but the best. Then?
Yes?
13 years ago, at Bradford Assizes, she was given life imprisonment for murdering our mother and father.
What?
She was convicted of murdering her own mother and father. She was 17 at the time. Oh. Sit down, please. For coolness, she staged a fake burglary to make it all seem the work of intruders.
I'm sorry, I can't grasp any of this.
Let me put it in the right order. She murdered them and then went to the village dance. I saw her there. I was at the dance myself. She was enjoying herself enormously while they lay dead. The judge said she was dancing on a grave. And then she slipped away from the dance and staged the burglary. She took a ladder from the mill warehouse down the road, brought it here, climbed up and broke the window. She climbed in and rifled the room where they were lying dead, emptied drawers on the floor, took money and jewellery. She put it in the river. It was found there later with a hammer and the cutthroat razor.
Cutthroat razor? No, she...
She what?
She hated cutthroat razors.
Wouldn't you hate them if you'd done what she did? And then, after she'd staged the burglary, she returned to the dance. She wanted to give the impression that she never left it. She danced and laughed and made eyes at the young men while her parents lay dead.
There's been some horrible mistake.
There was no mistake.
No, what you told me is all circumstantial.
No, there was an eyewitness.
Eyewitness?
She was seen coming back in the dark with the ladder. Climbing up, breaking in.
She had a clear conscience. She never harmed a soul in her life. Those were practically her dying words.
Take away the tolling of the bell, and the funeral was like a silent film. The villagers stood in silence along the street as the hearse passed silently over the snow to the churchyard beside the river. I rode in the back of the following car between the silent Grace and the silent Virginia. At one moment, the silence was threatened when a woman with grey hair broke from the crowd and ran in front of the hearse, which swerved and stopped. She waved her arms and opened and closed her mouth in some silent curse at the coffin, and then at me, before she was bundled away and we could go on.
Who on earth was that?
The village loon. Virginia.
What?
Bridie Whitepool, the village loon. She walks up and down, cursing her enemies. I don't think she likes you, Mr. Haviland. I should keep my bedroom door locked at night.
Virginia, stop talking nonsense.
Bridie who?
Bridie Whitepool. She walks by night.
Why should she have anything against me?
Well, you were Angela's husband.
Stop this, Virginia. We're almost at the church.
The graveyard was a calm white expanse, marred only by the brutal black hole they dug for Angela. I heard no word of the service. Virginia beside me was too much of a distraction, pale and calm now, black veil, golden hair. And so I stared hard at Angela's coffin and tried to put traitorous thoughts of her sister from my mind. The villagers hadn't come with us into church, but when we emerged, they were waiting among the tombstones as though entranced. Under a yew tree to one side, the reporter and the photographer were stamping their feet and sharing a bottle. No one else moved or spoke. What thoughts lay behind those staring eyes watering with cold? Hatred? Sympathy for the sisters? It was much more than simple curiosity. As she was lowered into the earth beside her parents, it was as though they were witnessing a wonder or an execution.
I'm sorry I behaved rather badly last night, Mr. Haviland. I don't know what you must think of me.
Thomas. Please call me Thomas. No, I think we were all under a strain.
No, but I was practically hysterical. You must make allowances for me, Thomas.
Virginia, eat your dinner and don't chatter.
Make allowances? I'm afraid I don't understand.
My headaches. I had a splitting one last night. They sometimes lead me into rather unreasonable behaviour.
Don't exaggerate, Virginia. You're sometimes a little highly strung, that's all.
Headaches? Do you often get headaches?
Oh, and how? They're the bane of my life.
How long have you been getting them?
Oh, for years and years.
Do you ever
Thomas,
find
a little more meat?
No, thank you.
Hardly any lunch. Hmm? I want you to eat a good big dinner and keep up your strength. That's enough medical conversation for one night.
Thank you. I'm not hungry. I was just wondering if these headaches of Virginia's...
Please. We all have headaches from time to time, but we don't talk about them continuously. I'm sorry, but haven't we had enough of illness and death for one day? Now, do have some more to eat, Mr. Haviland. You've a long journey ahead of you. Yes, we must think of ways of getting you out of here.
So soon? Oh, great!
If you pack your things tonight, Mr. Wiseman should be able to get you out of the Dale first thing in the morning.
Gracie can't possibly go. Not in all this snow.
He must.
Must?
He must get back to work.
The poor man only buried his wife this morning, and you want to drive him out into the storm.
Storm? Nonsense. It's perfectly calm now. Thomas has his work to attend to, and he has to travel all the way to Cornwall.
Perhaps we should consult him.
Virginia?
Perhaps he wants to stay for a few days and see the places where his wife grew up and spent her childhood.
Virginia?
I know I would.
Virginia, I think I know what's best for us all. Now, please go and telephone Mr. Wiseman and ask if he could kindly drive Mr. Haviland to the station in time for the first train in the morning.
But you still haven't asked Thomas.
Virginia, do as I say, or you'll make me very angry.
Yes. Yes, Grace, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Aren't you worried about those headaches of hers?
Of course I am. I don't want her worrying, too.
Yes, but in view of the way Angela died...
In view of the way Angela died, I'll be taking her to the best consultant I can find as soon as possible. And the sooner you leave here, the quicker I'll be able to do so.
Do you have headaches, too?
No. Only the headache of trying to rescue something from the wreck of our lives.
Angela's consultant thought the tumours may have been inherited.
So you said.
Did any other member of the family, your mother or your father...
Die from tumours? They weren't given the chance.
Suffer from headaches? Or fits of temper? Why do you hesitate?
Mother had headaches. Not that she complained. Suffered in silence.
Bad temper?
Didn't suffer fools gladly. You kept out of her way on bad days.
Violent?
Of course not. Only with her tongue. The village went in terror of her. She was the rod of iron.
I think you must take after her.
What?
Did she ever actually strike anyone?
Quien hentos, pentamentos.
What?
It was a phrase of my mother's when we little ones were asking too many questions. She was Argentinian, did you know?
No, I didn't.
Yes, father met her over there when he was a young man sent over to buy some special wool. She was amazingly beautiful.
Yes, I can see that. Did she ever...
Please stop asking these endless questions. What you must realize is that the greatest danger to Virginia's peace of mind is you. You're coming here. Leave her in peace. Is it any wonder she has headaches, nightmares, fits of hysteria? She was 10 years old. 10 years old. She was here in the house when it happened. Mercifully, she can't recall any of it. It was driven out of her mind because it was too awful to keep in there. That's the only thing that saved her sanity. A blessed amnesia. My great fear, why I didn't want you here, why I want you to go now, is that you're going to disturb that, to bring it back, to trigger some switch in her mind and bring back all the horror.
You two look awfully solemn. Are you talking about me? Did you get through to Mr. Wiseman?
Yes, I did.
Well? He told me to look out of the window.
Window?
The storm started again. It's coming down like fury. Nobody's going to get out of here for days and days.
I was headachy myself next morning, and slightly feverish. Outside my bedroom window, all was calm, white, unnaturally still. After breakfast, Grace went off to teach the handful of children who managed to struggle to the village school, and Virginia left for the office at the mill. It was no longer a working mill. It had died with her parents. In a sense, the entire village had been murdered, because there was little other work hereabouts. The sisters lived on the rents of property scattered about the dale, and Virginia ran the estate office from the mill with the help of an elderly clerk. Their absence gave me the chance I wanted to explore the house, in particular to examine the parents' bedroom. I opened door after door, and at last came to one that wouldn't yield. I'd noticed a board of keys in the hall. I ran down and then up again. The key turned easily, and the door swung open, then closed after me. There was no mistaking the massive mahogany parental bed. Tortoiseshell combs and silverback brushes still lay on the dressing table and were reflected in the triple mirrors. I went to the window and looked down at the brown river rushing between the white banks. It was crossed by an iron footbridge only a few yards from the house. I was starting to open the window to look down and see how she could have climbed in when the door swung open. An enormously fat old ginger cat walked stiffly inside and stood staring at me. My God, Snuff, the kitten of Angela's painting book. I called its name softly, Snuff. Come here, Snuff. And it came slowly up to me, dragging one poor arthritic leg, and rubbed itself against my trousers. The doorbell shocked me. Without a pause for thought, I hurried out, locked the door, and went downstairs. In the hall, I returned the key to its place.
Yes, just a moment.
As I opened the front door, a camera clicked in my face.
What? Oh, my God, not you again.
Morning, Mr. Avalon. Sorry about that. Harry, now, what did I tell you? Behave yourself.
I'll wring his neck if he keeps doing that.
He won't trouble you again. He's off to the paper now to get that one printed. So long, Harry. Take care.
Back to the paper. What is he, the abominable snowman?
There's a route out called Solomon's Steps. If you've a sure foot and a head for heights and an urgent deadline...
Yeah, don't stand waffling. Come inside.
Come inside? Me?
I need some information.
Me? Inside there? Are the ladies at home?
No.
In that case, I'll come in.
Are you sure the ladies aren't here?
Yes. What are you worried about?
Nothing. So long as we're alone... Well, it's not such a gloomy old place after all.
No corpse on the floor.
No. It's quite a pleasant room, in fact.
Yes.
Have they shown you the slaughter chamber?
What?
The death room. They say it was like an abattoir.
Listen, what is your name?
Grinton, Stanley Grinton.
Have you been on this case from the start?
The story? I broke it to the world. I've been covering this dale for 50 years, man and boy.
50 years?
69 years old and still get round most of it on my pedal bike. See out of the window there? You see the lane starting on the far side of the river? That leads up to 4 villages tucked away in those hills. There's Churl, Scarl, White Ladder and Humbleford. And if a bat so much as whistles in any one of them, it goes straight down in my notepad. So, what do you want to know?
Was she guilty?
What?
Was Angela Herdwick guilty?
Guilty as hell.
What makes you so sure?
She was seen in crystal clear moonlight coming back to this house with a ladder.
But what possible motive could she have had?
Well, who knows? Some faulty wiring upstairs? The mother was a peculiar bowl of fish. Something could have been handed down.
Peculiar, the mother?
A very tempestuous Latin American lady with a great sense of pride. Family honour, you know. Anything to maintain the good name of the family. Though, mind you, she kept the mill wheels turning through sheer force of personality. It all cracked up when she was gone. That's why there's so much bitterness in the dale about Angela.
Yes. Tell me, a woman broke out of the crowd yesterday and ran in front of the hearse.
Bridie Whitepool?
Yes.
Now there you are, a case in point. When he was thrown out of work, her husband drowned himself in that river. And she still walks up and down, cursing Angela's name.
You said that Angela was seen coming back here in the moonlight. Seen by whom?
The most reliable witness you could find in all this dale, from White Ladder Cross to Gimmerbeck Stepping Stones.
Who's that?
Me.
You? What were you doing there?
Riding down from Humbleford on my bike. I was just about to cross the footbridge when I saw this apparition floating along the far bank. She was wearing a long white dress, all gauzy and billowing. Ooh, it made my heart bump. And then she leaned the ladder against the wall and went up.
You're certain it was Angela?
Saw the face and hair as plain as I see you now.
What did you do?
I passed water.
What?
I passed water, then rode on my way rejoicing. I'd supped a few pints that night. Been covering a big darts championship up at Humbleford. You know what I thought? Here's a young lass sneaking home late from the dance because she's frightened of disturbing her parents. That's why the whole thing went out of my mind.
You mean you forgot about it?
Only for a day or two. It all got overtaken by events. Next day, her mum and dad were found. It was all telephone calls, press conferences, running hither and yon. A new story for every edition. It was 3 or 4 days before I suddenly remembered. Then I went to the police and told them what I'd seen.
You mean you were drunk when you saw her?
What?
You didn't even remember till you sobered up 4 days later.
Now, don't go twisting my words.
My God, you were cock-eyed. The girl could have been anybody.
The girl was Angela Herdwick. And damned sorry I am to say it.
Sorry?
She was the pick of them all. I knew her from the day she was crowned Sunday school queen. Lovely, open, friendly lass with a real sense of obligation. Too out for anybody. Weeding the old folks' gardens, running errands, inquiring about your health. Do you think I'd shop a girl like that unless I was absolutely convinced? Putting her away was like snuffing out a lovely bright lamp that lit up this village. Now, if it had been one of the other two...
What? You'd have shopped them with pleasure?
I'd shop no one with pleasure. But it wouldn't have weighed on my conscience so much. Look, I'd better be off before they come back.
Why? What have they done to you?
The old one, nothing. But when she looks at me, it's as though a ground frost had gone right through me.
It's because you shopped her sister?
Well, maybe.
And Virginia?
She's not right in the head.
How do you mean?
Up and down, like the mist on those fells. Took a poker to me, she did.
What? When was that?
3 years ago. I came here with a polite request. I just wanted an interview on the 10th anniversary of the murder. You know, how the Herdwick girls were coping 10 years after the bloodbath. How the house of carnage was now a haven of calm. She flew at me with a poker, with no provocation at all.
In the haven of calm?
Yes. What? Listen, what was that?
It sounded like the front door.
Hide me. You've got to hide me. Can I get out of here?
Quiet. She won't come in here.
Puss, puss, puss. Come on, Snuff, you silly
old boy. Hang on for a moment. If I can get her into the kitchen, you can slip out.
Snuff? Snuff? Snuff, Snuff?
Hello. Soon back.
Hello, Thomas. Have you seen the cat anywhere?
No, why?
I always pop back at this time to give him his breakfast, and he's usually waiting for me.
No, I haven't. Oh.
Yes?
Oh, no, I haven't seen him at all this morning. Perhaps he got locked in the kitchen.
No, I looked. Oh, maybe he's wandered upstairs. He likes sleeping on the bed.
No, I don't think he's up there.
How do you know?
Oh, I mean, I haven't seen him.
I'll take a look anyway. Snuff! Puss, puss, puss! Are you up there?
Out. She's gone upstairs.
Thanks.
Quickly, does it. Right. Oh, wait.
What?
You're forgetting your hat.
Oops. Thanks.
Off you go.
You naughty, naughty boy.
Oh, sir, you found him.
Yes, I found him. Keep still, I'll give you your milk in a minute. Do you know where he was?
No, no, I don't.
He was in our parents' room.
Really?
Yes. He was meowing and scratching to get out.
Really?
Yes. Somebody's been a very naughty, prying boy. But I won't scold him. Not this time. This time we'll let naughty, nosy Tom off with a warning, won't we? papers. Eh? Eh? But next time, he'll be in trouble.
Grace had left me some sandwiches and a flask of coffee for lunch. Afterwards, I became very drowsy and sat before the fire in the drawing room, thinking how Angela must have sat here with her drawing book. I dreamed of her, but Virginia's face kept blotting hers out. I woke in a sweat to find the fire low and the afternoon darkening. I was shivering, and there was a throbbing ache in the muscles of my limbs and shoulders. To my confused senses, it seemed that Angela stood somewhere in the shadows of the room, accusing me of unfaithfulness and neglect. Her presence was so strong that a whiff of the scent she used seemed to hang in the air. I realized I hadn't visited her grave that day. I found some old Wellington boots, which must have been her father's, and set out for the churchyard. I plucked a handful of snowdrops from a sheltered bank to scatter on the grave. But when I got there, Angela had gone. There was no sign of her. Deep snow covered all the dead and their monuments. Angela was obliterated. And then I seemed to hear her voice in the deepening dusk.
Thomas! Thomas! Darling!
I turned round to see a figure standing high on the hill above me, silhouetted against the white of the fell behind.
Thomas! Thomas!
She held out a hand and beckoned me. I started towards her. I had to cross the road and climb a fence. I stumbled across the field, through snow that came to my armpits, then started up the hill.
Hey there! Hi! Stop, man!
I looked back towards the road. A man came awkwardly over the fence, Grinton. He waved his arms and came blundering towards me through the passage I'd forced in the snow.
Hi! Where do you think you're going? Stop, man, for God's sake! Stand where you are! Stop! Careful. What's the matter? Have you gone mad? Do you want to kill yourself?
No. Up there. Look up there.
Up there? Look at what?
On top of the hill.
Well, I see nothing.
Look harder.
Why, I'm well.
No. No. I must have been...
10 more steps and you'd have had it, chum.
What?
You were heading straight for a bloody great gully.
What?
The remains of an old quarry. Can't see it now because it's full of drifted snow. Another 10 steps and you'd have gone right over the edge, and that would have been the end of you, Mr. Avaland. Whatever got into you?
I thought I saw somebody beckoning me.
Beckoning? If they had, they'd have been beckoning you to your death. Started seeing things, have we? I want to watch that. There's enough madness in that house. Let me look at you. Oh, you're not well, lad. That's your trouble. High colour, high temperature. I'll get you back to the house. Come on. Hang on to me.
What?
That's right. Come on, come on now. Steady. Steady. That's the
eye. Grinton left me at the gate. I took a hot bath and felt a lot better. Before dinner, I was summoned to the headmistress's study.
I understand you entered our parents' bedroom this morning. Well, I'm waiting for an explanation.
I'm trying to help Angela. I'm trying to form a clear picture.
You can help no one now. The dead are beyond your assistance. You can only disturb or destroy the living.
I can't live with this uncertainty.
Uncertainty? Did you know she didn't speak in her own defence? She pleaded not guilty and reserved her right to silence. That means she couldn't be cross-examined. When that happens, a jury draws its own conclusions.
You mean silence is taken for guilt?
What else can it be taken for?
Yet you remain silent and expect me to think you've nothing to hide.
I? Silent? I'll answer anything you care to ask.
Grace, tell me what happened that day.
Very well. It was a Saturday. A bright, crisp winter's day. At breakfast, Angela asked if she could go to the dance with me that night. Mother said no, not until she was 18. Later that morning, I heard Father trying to persuade Mother to change her mind. Angela was always his favourite. In the afternoon, Father drove her into Rigworth, and when they came back, she had the new white ball gown. They paid £37 for it. Am I being detailed enough? Perhaps I could describe the style and length of the skirt. Mother still said no, but Father kept trying to get round her. When I was getting ready for the dance, Angela still didn't know if the answer was yes or no. I see her now, sitting on her bed in her petticoat with a dress spread out beside her. I wish I'd stayed, but I was young too. There was a boy I thought I was... Never mind that. He went off with some other girl. I was a wallflower all night.
What time did you leave here?
Almost 9.
And where was Virginia when you left?
Asleep in bed. I know she was asleep because I looked in on her on my way out.
What did you think when Angela eventually turned up at the dance?
I was glad for her.
And she was a great success?
Yes, they all wanted to dance with her.
And you were?
Yes, a wallflower all night. But if you're suggesting that I was jealous...
No. But if you'd been the one who slipped away from the dance...
No one would have missed me. How true. I was just part of the wallpaper. But I was wearing pink. The girl seen ascending the ladder was dressed in white. Now, shall we go down to dinner?
After dinner, I dozed heavily again in the chair by the fire. I dreamed I was back once more at the old house in Morganmouth. Angela was singing at the piano. I got up and crossed the room. Her hair hung down and hid her face. I stretched out my hand and touched her on the shoulder.
Thomas?
What?
Yes? Is something wrong?
Virginia?
Yes?
I'm sorry, I thought for a moment...
Were you having a dream?
Yes. The fire must have put me to sleep.
A dream about her?
Yes.
And then you woke and found it was me. How funny. Oh, I'm sorry. That's quite sad, really.
Do you often sing that song?
Yes, it was one that my...
I see.
You don't look well. Why don't you have a little walk to clear your head?
A walk?
Yes, you could try the bridge.
The bridge?
Yes. The river's a wonderful sight on nights like this, foaming away in the moonlight. Try it. It'll blow away all the cobwebs.
It was an old iron footbridge with a 4-foot-high handrail on either side. I stood in the middle, with thoughts as turbulent as the river itself, one being that I was half in love with that girl, or perhaps in love with half of her. Suddenly, from the house side, I sensed a shape gliding swiftly towards me, and as I turned, I felt a blow on the head that forced me to my knees. 3 or 4 more blows came down before I pulled the legs out from under her. We grappled in the dark and rolled towards the edge. Then somehow she was over the side. I saw a white face bob in the moonlight 20 yards away, and an arm strike out. Then the figure was carried away in the current. After that, I must have passed out. It must have been a quarter of an hour before I dragged myself back to the house and looked in at the drawing-room window. Virginia was still at the piano, smiling to herself, her hair gleaming as though it had just been washed. But gold always does. I stood in the hall examining the carpet. For what? A trail of water? Then a door closed quietly upstairs. I ran up 2 at a time and found Grace outside the bathroom door. She wore a dark green woolen dressing gown and a towel over her head.
Hello, you're in a hurry.
How long have you been in there?
I beg your pardon.
What were you doing in there?
Queen Hentor spent the mentors.
Come on, answer my question.
Thomas, there are certain questions a gentleman just doesn't put and that a lady certainly...
Was it you out there?
Good heavens. What have you done to your head? You're bleeding.
I was attacked on the bridge.
Attacked?
Somebody tried to kill me.
What? But who... I mean, are you serious?
Ah.
Thomas, steady... Thomas,
Sorry. Falling, fall.
That's all right. Hold on to me. I won't let you fall. Virginia, come up here. You'll be all right. It's just some arcus of concussion.
No. Fever. 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 Had it for days.
Fever?
Malaria.
What?
What a fool I've been.
Malaria?
Fever for days. Malaria. You die of it, you know.
Virginia! Come up here quickly! Give me a hand! Thomas is ill! We'll have to get him to bed!
Chloroquine.
You'll have to speak up, Thomas. I can't hear.
Synthetic quinine.
You need quinine? You're sure it's malaria?
Listen. Angela?
No, it's Grace. You're in Gimmerbeck, remember?
Poor Angela. How you've aged.
Thomas, it's Grace you're talking to.
Angela, how young you look.
Hush, just lie back.
I can see two of them.
There are two of us. I'll have to get out of here and find some quinine.
This time, where from?
I'll have to get through to Rigworth. I'll ring Dr. Brimelow.
You'll never get out of the valley.
I could try Solomon's Steps. I've done it in worse weather than this.
Not in the dark.
I'll manage. Don't worry. I'll have to leave you alone with him for a few hours. Will you be all right?
Yes, I'll manage. I can play nurses.
I came to consciousness chilled to the bone. I was alone, in the dark. A darkness softened by the glowing fire in the tiny bedroom grate. The opening of the door as she came in made the flames leap up for a moment. The reflections flickered over her face and along the shaft of something about 6 inches long that glittered in her hand. Something of brightly shining metal. She came creeping towards me. I lay still until the last moment.
Thomas! Oh, my wrist! Oh, you're hurting me! Please!
Let go of it.
Oh, Thomas, please, Thomas!
Will you let go? I said drop it! There. Now, where is it? What? Is this all?
Yes. A spoon. What did you think?
A spoon?
I brought you some bread and milk. Look, there it is. Yeah, I forgot the spoon. What did you think it was?
How's your wrist?
Oh, it's all right. Here, look, let me cover you up. Your teeth are chattering.
Is there a decent fire downstairs?
Yes, why?
I'm coming down. It's freezing up
no,
here.
No, I don't think...
No, I'm coming down. Give me a hand.
My razor still lay in its brown leather case on the bedside table. As a precaution, I took it down with me. I sank into the easy chair in front of the fire. She draped me in blankets.
Are we alone in the house?
Yes.
So we can have it all out.
Have what out?
Without interference from your protector.
Protector?
She's been protecting you for 13 years, hasn't she?
I don't know what you're talking about.
It was you on the hill last night, wasn't it, pretending to be Angela?
No, never.
It's no use. Your protector isn't here. I'm going to get the complete truth.
It was just a game.
A game?
Yes. I was just playing a trick on you, pretending to be Angela, calling to you from the hill. I like playing games. I know it's silly, but something comes over me and I act like a child. There's no harm in it.
I could have been killed. You were leading me to the quarry.
I didn't realise that until later. Honestly, Thomas, it was just a silly game.
And when you attacked me on the bridge, was that a game?
On the bridge? I never did.
You're a pathetic little liar.
Honestly, I never attacked you on the bridge. Cross my heart and hope to die.
What did you say?
Cross my heart and hope to die.
How old are you?
What does it matter how old I am?
You're 10 years old.
What?
You're stuck on 10 years old like a record that won't move forward. You've been 10 for the last 13 years.
No, I'm 23. I was 23 in November. Yes, I had a cake with 23 candles, so there.
What happened on the night your parents died?
I don't know.
Think.
No, I mustn't.
Think hard.
Grace says I mustn't think about it at all.
Grace does? Grace thinks she's protecting you. She's doing you terrible harm. Now listen to me carefully, Virginia. The clock stopped for you 13 years ago. Don't you want to move it forward?
I don't know what you mean.
You're a beautiful woman with the chance to lead a happy, fulfilled life with children of your own. But that won't happen because you're emotionally frozen on 10 years old because you refuse to face up to what happened that night.
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Because you're blocking it out. You've got to bring it to the surface and then you'll start to grow.
No. I've got to put it from my mind forever. Angela said so.
Angela said so?
Yes.
Why did she say that?
I don't know. I can't remember. I'm going. I've got to go to bed. My head, it's hurting.
Look, do you know what I have in this case?
No.
It's a cutthroat razor. Look. Does it remind you?
No.
Would you like to hold it in your hand?
No.
Why are you afraid of it?
All right, I'll hold it. Give it to me. Thank you. Oh, isn't it beautiful? Doesn't it glitter? Aren't you just a little afraid of me?
Should I be?
I don't know. I don't know.
What did you do that night?
Stop! Stop, Mummy, no! Daddy, don't let her. Stop! Stop! No!
You remember. What do you remember?
No! No! Stop! Stop! Stop!
What do you remember?
Voices. Voices. No, she won't. Yes, she will. No, she won't. Yes, she will. Be quiet. I'm trying to sleep.
Where are you? Where are you, Virginia?
In my room. I'm in bed. Angela, take off that dress. No, she won't. Leave her alone. I get out of bed and go to the landing. A tug of war's going on. Mummy on one side, Daddy on the other. Angela in the middle in her white ball dress. They don't see me standing there. Angela in tears. I don't want to go to the dance. I don't want to. Father gets between them somehow and pushes Mother back into the bedroom and gives Angela a little push on her way. Go on. Off you go. Have a lovely time. I hear the front door close downstairs, which means she's gone to the dance. Mummy comes out and runs downstairs. Is she going for Angela? No, she's on her way back. Doesn't see me. Blind. Mummy, what's that in your hand? Daddy stands in the doorway, and she raises it, then down. Crack on his fingers covering his head. Up again. Down on his head. He goes back into the room. No word spoken. I try to shout, scream. No sound comes. I stand in the doorway. Daddy on the floor, blow after blow coming down. Mummy, no, no. But no words come out of my mouth. She puts the hammer down and goes to the dressing table. Razor there. She puts her hand on her head. She grabs her hair, thick, long hair, and pulls her head back by the hair, her throat so white. Her hand comes up with the razor and moves across, one deep, slow stroke. I run down. 10 steps at a time, flying, snow on the ground, slippers, nighty, but I don't feel the cold. Empty road. The whole village has gone to the dance. Music in the distance. Dum-dee-dee, dum-dee-dum-dee-dee. Just one figure in the distance. Angela! I scream and run and scream and run, and she hears, stops, turns. I tell her, what? She starts back to the house, running, leaving me in my nightie, and I know it's not real. Girls don't stand in the middle of the dark street in the snow in their nightie. Only in dreams. And I go back, slowly, to the house. Yes, yes, in a dream. I go in the hall. Angela is coming down the stairs. White, whiter than her dress. She picks up the phone. She stares at it with a frown as though it's some object that holds no meaning for her. She puts it down. Stop. No. Virginia, it's too late to help them calm. We must be calm. This didn't happen. Someone else did it. We must make it look as though someone else did it. For Mummy's good name.
for her good name. Do you understand, Virginia? And you must put what you saw from your mind. You must put it from your mind forever.
But I'd wrenched it to the surface, and I'm still not sure it was for the best. In a moment, Virginia had lost her youth. Deep creases of care were suddenly carved on her forehead that had been calm. Wrinkles were forming round the eyes. The clock had moved forward, and it might have been Angela standing there. The Angela who'd taken the blame and lived in silence with the pain and the horror for 13 years. Next day, they dragged Bridie Whitepool from the river. She'd obviously tried to kill me, as she imagined Angela had destroyed her husband.
You see, these tragedies leave lots of crippled lives in their wake. The irony of it all is that I did what I did to clear Angela's good name. What do I do now, John?
Just rest and get well. You're in good hands.
Grace. Yes, she's a good nurse, given the circumstances. Could you pour me a glass of water?
Oh.
It's good of you to trek up here in weather like this.
It's clearing nicely. Look at the green on those hills.
Thank you. But you see, I had to have someone to talk to. A cool, clear mind. John Dockett, I thought. He'll advise me.
I could give you a dry legal answer, if that's what you want. No, it wouldn't be a penalty of use to anybody.
You're telling me I should do nothing? Keep the truth buried?
Oh, the truth's an overrated commodity. Let them all rest in peace. It was Angela's wish, wasn't it? What worries me more is whether young Virginia has the same trouble as Angela.
A brain tumour. Well, I'm no expert, but I suspect not. I think her troubles were all in the mind. At least I pray they were.
You may well be right. She seems a calm enough girl to me, if a sad one. Who's that playing down there?
Oh, I think that must be Virginia.
In Winter Music by Ken Whitmore, Thomas Haviland was played by Martin Jarvis, Virginia and Angela by Julie Higginson, and Grace by Linda Gardner. John Dockett was played by Jeffrey Banks, Stanley Grinton by Harry Beattie, and Wiseman and the Hospital Doctor by Peter Wheeler. The pianist was Tom Steer. Winter Music was directed in Manchester by Alfred Bradley.